Greetings to you, oh beautiful bumblebee-skinned dragons of light. My friend was telling me this crazy story. He said he was walking late at night in downtown LA, and he ended up walking next to a man with severe burns all over his body, and he asked the man, "What happened to you?" And the man said, "Well, you know, I was practicing radical inclusivity, and I made friends with a pyromaniac." My friend, he asked him, "Well, did you figure out how to deal with that? Like, how does radical inclusivity work in a world where there are people who just love setting shit on fire?" The stranger stopped and smiled. He said, "You know, I used to be a lot like you. I was worried because I recognized that with the growing interconnectivity happening all over the planet, the technologically enhanced hyperconnectivity that we are all experiencing, that our ideas of inclusivity and embrace, opening our arms to all points of view, could actually be exploited by others, that the concept that we should be completely open-minded when it comes to all ways of life, including the ways of the pyromaniac, could get us in a lot of trouble at some point, especially if people began to exploit that vulnerability. But what I realized was the solution to the entire problem. I actually discovered a way that we can coexist with pyromaniacs." And my friend looked him in the eye and said, "How? What is that way? Tell me." The stranger smiled, but before he could reply, he spontaneously combusted right in front of my friend. Now, I've heard about spontaneous combustion since I was a little kid. There was a small period in my life where I was actually terrified of spontaneously combusting. If you've never heard of this phenomenon before, there was this idea. I think it's kind of faded away now that we have cell phones and everyone's filming themselves 24/7. But there was an idea that you could just maybe have the wrong meal, maybe a bowl of baked beans, some honeyed bread and jam, and then sip some like rare form of vodka, sit down in your recliner with a good book, and then poof, you would essentially like do the same thing that happens with cell phones. You would just explode into flames. And they would find people like in recliners with just a pile of ash and some boots or slippers, and that's it. There's pictures of this. And so people thought, yeah, your nervous system sometimes just fucks up and you can just spontaneously combust. That was a phenomenon that at one time people thought was real. But ever since I talked to my friend, it really has got me thinking about this idea of radical inclusivity, of like opening our arms, of making our membranes more permeable to all points of view, of the idea that, geez, we live in this super hyper-connected world, and there are people in this hyper-connected world who really have some pretty violent ideologies, and who like accidentally or not so accidentally, because of their beliefs, they end up setting lots of people on fire. I was going through some old journals that I was keeping when I was in the second grade, and I actually found something in them that maybe would help answer this difficult question. I'm just going to read a little bit from this journal. And, you know, I was in the second grade, so don't judge me on the writing style. "We have no reason to take this threat lightly. Everywhere in the West, there are subversive minorities who, sheltered by our humanitarianism and our sense of justice, hold the incendiary torches ready with nothing to stop the spread of their ideas except the critical reason of a single, fairly intelligent, mentally stable stratum of the population. One should not, however, overestimate the thickness of this stratum. It varies from country to country in accordance with national temperament. Also, it is regionally dependent on public education and is subject to the influence of acutely disturbing factors of a political and economic nature. Taking plebiscites is a criterion, one could, on an optimistic estimate, put its upper limit at about 40% of the electorate. A rather more pessimistic view would not be unjustified either, since the gift of reason and critical reflection is not one of man's outstanding peculiarities, and even where it exists, it proves to be wavering and inconstant, the more so, as a rule, the bigger the political groups are. The mass crushes out the insight and reflection that are still possible with the individual, and this necessarily leads to doctrinaire and authoritarian tyranny if ever the constitutional state should succumb to a fit of weakness. So, you know, I think somewhere within there we can find, if nothing else, the low-level articulation of a big problem that we're facing right now. And that problem, you know, when I wrote that in the second grade, there wasn't even the internet. So, you know, this problem is being magnified to a great degree. And now in my older years, and when I'm not still, you know, in the playground with my hands in the sand, you know, writing in a journal when I can, I think I have, like, truly come up with the answer to how to deal with this. How do we maintain the humanitarian ideals of inclusivity while still protecting ourselves from ideologies that are innately destructive? And the way to do this is quite simple. All we have to do is... Shit, I just spontaneously combusted. That was crazy. It's not as bad as I thought it would be. My whole life I've been terrified of spontaneously combusting, and then it happens, and it's actually pretty cool. It's like getting massaged from on the inside by fire, by tiny little fiery hands. Huh, interesting. Wow, all that time I was secretly terrified of bursting into flames, and as it turns out, it's the thing I've been missing for my entire life. We've got a wonderful podcast for you today. The channeler, Paul Selig, is here with us. We're going to jump right into it, but first, some quick business. This episode of the DTFH is brought to you by a brand new sponsor who I have loved for a very long time. Charlotte's Web. Charlotte's Web Broad Spectrum Hemp Extract Oil. It's a wonderful product that when I was on tour doing my Squarespace tour, I used it at night because it helped in supporting my sleep cycles. It's really funny as I read this. These are the people making this stuff are amazing, and the product is incredible. And when they approached me to do it, I instantly agreed to it because this particular company makes amazing hemp extract oil that I've used, and it's helped me a lot. It helped me during a tour. It helped me deal with achieving a sense of calm and focus. It's funny. There's certain things right now. We live in a kind of time period where we have to be very careful when we talk about hemp extract oil. We have to say things like, for example, that these statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. The Food and Drug Administration, by the way, I used to think these people were out to get us, and they're not. I remember chatting with Rick Doblin and putting the FDA on blast like any truly myopic hippie would. And he explained to me, like, actually, you know, we need them because, it's important that in history there have been times where stuff has gotten into the bloodstream of the people that hasn't been so great. So regardless, we have to say that about this particular wonderful product, Charlotte's Web Spectrum Hemp Extract Oil. It's great, and it's great for a lot of reasons. Right now, we're in a time period where there's lots of types of hemp extract oil out there, and we don't necessarily know what's in it. But why the Charlotte's Web is so great is because they don't use any chemical pesticides, herbicides, or fungicides. The whole plant extract is filtered 5 times for quality and consistency. Their 250,000 hemp plants are tended by hand, and the company is driven by care. So you're going to get pesticide-free hemp extract supplements. More than just CBD, Charlotte's Web hemp extract supplements contain many of hemp's other naturally occurring phytocompounds that work together to heighten the positive effect of CBD. Charlotte's Web maintains high standards from seed to shelf, guaranteeing quality and consistency in every bottle. And Charlotte's Web can plant the exact plants needed for specific products to maintain product consistency. Charlotte's Web is offering a unique offer to you guys. Go to cwhemp.com and enter code Duncan at checkout to get 10% off your order. Don't forget to enter code Duncan at checkout to get 10% off. Some exclusions apply. See website for details. Because of the peculiar nature of the time that we're living in, there's so many things that I would like to say about CBD and hemp extract oil, but I can't say them in relation to a paid ad. But I highly recommend you guys going out and researching CBD and hemp extract oil and look at all the incredible information out there related to this beautiful supplement. It's amazing, and personally, anecdotally, I have used Charlotte's Web and have been deeply impressed by the potency of this particular supplement. So, if you've been interested in CBD oil or hemp extract oil, you should head over to cwhemp.com. cwhemp.com. Enter code Duncan at checkout to get 10% off your order. Don't forget to enter code Duncan at checkout to get 10% off. Some exclusions apply. Thank you, Charlotte's Web, for sponsoring this episode of the DTFH. A tremendous thank you to my supporters, my patrons, over at patreon.com. If you go to patreon.com/DTFH and subscribe, you will be injected into the throbbing neck vein of the universe. It's the inner sanctum of the DTFH, and you'll get commercial-free episodes of this podcast, along with an hour-long rambling yap per month and other stuff that lands there, including access to our Discord server. All you got to do is go to patreon.com/DTFH and subscribe. There's already a few episodes sitting there that have not yet been released. That's patreon.com/DTFH. Also, one of the coolest people I know on planet Earth is looking for a place to rent in the Echo Park / Silver Lake area, and he wants to spend around $1,500 per month. Reach out to me on Twitter if you authentically know of a cool place that could be home to one of the most creative, awesome humans I've ever met in my life. Do you like merchandise? We've got a lot of it over at DuncanTrussell.com. Click on the shop and you will bear witness to a entire new selection of really cool shirts, hoodies, and a variety of wild things over there. Check it out by going to DuncanTrussell.com and clicking on the shop. Now, without further ado, today's guest never fails to blow my mind. And I was actually nervous about interviewing him, not because he's a world-renowned channeler, but because the last time I was around him, the energy that comes out of him when he channels is so intense that it kind of freaks me out. So I was a little nervous about this interview that you're about to hear, but there was no reason for me to be nervous because Paul Selig is transmitting some pretty amazing information, and whoever the beings may be that are working through Paul Selig are some pretty amazing creatures, entities. You can find out everything you need to know about Paul Selig by going to his website, paulselig.com. Links will be at duncantrussell.com. Now, without further ado, everyone, please welcome to the Duncan Trussell Family Hour Podcast, Paul Selig. Paul, welcome back to the DTFH. It's great to see you again.
Great to see you too.
You look great. The last time I saw you, you had a cold.
Remember? I did have a cold, yeah.
Yeah, and you have recovered fully.
I've recovered very well, thank you.
It must be nice to travel down here from New York. Is that where you're headed?
That's where I live, but I travel a lot, and then this is a great place to be.
And you're going up to Monterey, right?
Uh-huh.
To do a retreat.
I'm doing a retreat at Asilomar, yeah.
How often do you find yourself traveling?
About three weekends a month, you know. That's about it. Sometimes I'll stay on the road for a bit, sometimes I won't. But I enjoy it, and I enjoy the work, so, you know, it's an opportunity for me to be in the world. Otherwise, I'm probably going to just hide in my apartment.
Right. Yeah. Well, that's a lot of us are doing that right now, huh?
Yeah.
I was sitting on my porch just looking out, and because you can see all these yards, and they're all just empty. It's a beautiful day. I have just ventured out for the first time in maybe like a day and a half to really get some sun because it's so easy to stay inside. But I was looking out just thinking, my God, we've all retreated into our homes. Mm-hmm. Why? What do you think that is?
I don't know. I mean, I've always been like that, truthfully. So, you know, when I'm not traveling, I'm happy to hibernate. I have a dog. I have a fireplace. Mm. I live in New York. It's very loud. There's a lot of people.
Yes.
And so I venture out. I have my experience of the real world, and then I retreat, you know, as quickly as possible.
Do you think that your line of work and your ability and your connection with this transcendent force is disrupting your life here? Do you ever feel like it's hard to connect to this place?
No, I mean, not any more so than it ever was, you know. I mean, I think I'm one of those people that operated well in the world. I, you know, I had a life. I was a college teacher, you know. I had things that I did that I love, but I'm highly empathic, and that's a challenge sometimes. Mm-hmm. So when I'm being hit by a lot of stuff, I'm aware of it. But the work that I do as a channel isn't intrusive. You know, when I'm, my guides, I always say, you know, they're not going to talk to me unless I ask a question. I mean, if I say, you know, if I want to walk into traffic, I can do it. That's up to me.
Right.
You know, if I say, is this a good time to cross the street? They may say, not wise.
Right.
You know, and counsel at that level. But no, you know, I'm not bombarded by things from the other worlds.
Oh, right. Well, you know, what is it? What's that quote people say all the time? The madman drowns in the waters that the mystic swims within.
Yeah.
And so what I've noticed happening to some of my friends and in stories is that people will drink ayahuasca, people will have some big psychedelic moment where they go into the other realms, where they see it for real, or they are as real as they can believe it's real. And then they get back here, and they don't want to connect anymore to this place.
Yeah.
They withdraw.
Yeah.
Because they can't deal with investing themselves here in this particular zone of the universe when they know there's this.
Yeah.
But you're able to, that this bifurcation of the...
It's normal for me now. So that's sort of how I live, you know. And when I first started opening up, when I was in my late 20s, early 30s, I was surprised by it all. And I had a couple of big peak experiences that they weren't induced by ayahuasca or anything else. I mean, they really just sort of happened. And they were large enough for me that they gave me a marker for something that exists in a way of being in the world that could be experienced. But it was always about a way of being in the world. And what my guides bring through is about being in the world and being in the body and having this experience as your operative. It's not about floating off someplace. Right. I mean, I've done anything a human being can do to try to check out, you know, over the course of my life. And that doesn't work. You know, it really is about sort of, I think at this point, sort of learning how to maintain a sense of connection, you know, in the face of a lot of stuff that doesn't seem to make much sense. But I see that too. I see these people that have these really large experiences and they don't really know how to integrate them.
Yeah.
You know, so you just want to go back to the big experience. And I don't know. I think the experiences we get, for me, they were enough. And the ones that I had were enough to show me that there was a reality that could be experienced and known. And right. that kept me going more than anything else. Kept me moving forward.
Oh, sure. Right. What a relief, I suppose.
Yeah.
Right? Because suddenly you do see that this thing you've been hearing about or maybe, you know, depicted in movies. Oh, no, actually, there is a lot more going on here than what you think. If what you think is going on here is based on mainstream media and what they teach you in public schools.
Yeah.
And man, for me, that is, you know, just sweet water from the fountain of youth.
Mm-hmm.
But then another part of me starts getting really curious and interested in why this other place is not acknowledged here. Why is it so, like, destroyed by skeptics and scientists and just the general concept is like, oh great, you're going to talk about aliens now.
Yeah.
Oh, spirits, really? That no, it's all matter. Mm-hmm. And so then I start getting conspiratorial and think there's an actual active sort of for maybe it's a subconscious intent, but there does seem to be a rather active pressure against understanding that there's something bigger than here. Do you ever grok that? Do you get that sense?
I mean, but I have my own version of it, you know, which is my own belief that I can kick into. And this is, you know, how I came to this whole thing. I mean, with this real investment in separation and feeling myself as being extremely separate from whatever you might call God or other people or whatever. And what happens, I think, for some of us is we sort of fall through that trap door into this other kind of experience. But my personality self, you know, which my guides would call the small self, still has a great investment in that stuff.
Right.
In separation. So once I get the understanding that separation is the big lie, you know, that's the big lie.
Yeah.
And that everything that wants to counter that is everything that wants to maintain a status quo.
Right.
And my guides say, you know, the small self is always perpetuating the known or what it has believed to be true,
right,
because it can't conceive of anything beyond it. And what they're teaching now, which is really mind-blowing, is, and they're calling it beyond the known, you know, and it's really what happens when you stop investing in the collective agreement.
Mm.
And they do this energetically so that you're actually lifting to a place of vibration or consciousness
right.
that's operating beyond the rules or the things that we've been taught to believe were true. But do I think that there's a conspiracy per se? You know, I kind of think the challenge with that is if I want to go there and I can go there, I end up aligning to the level of consciousness that creates the conspiracy.
Wow.
I end up lowering the vibration, and you really can't
right.
transform anything by that you're in energetic accord to. You
right.
have to go above it to have the higher experience and then lift it to you, which is a reconception, and that's sort of what I understand is alchemy. It's the realization of the divine that must exist in all things, because whatever you want to call God or the universe or spirit must exist in everything, including those things that I would call separate. And the moment I do that, I lift it. I mean, the guides say, you know, whatever you damn, damns you right back. Right. You know, whatever you bless, blesses you. So I can go there if I want to, but I choose not to.
Wow, cool. I love it. It reminds me of, I'm reading a great book right now by Jaron Lanier, who coined the term virtual reality. He's just this super genius, you know, just super genius. He's, when he's like 10, he's cutting glass for telescopes and that kind of mind. But he was talking about how virtual reality, if there was time travel and someone from 20 years in the future brought VR back and we could experience that technology, it would be indistinguishable from where we're at right now. We wouldn't be able to tell the difference between the VR world, depending on the whatever they'd programmed for it. But he was saying if we went back in time and showed virtual reality to someone 10 years ago that we have now, they would feel like it was pretty indistinguishable from reality because their experience was only, they'd only experienced the technology up to that point.
Yeah.
So his point is, you know, we can't see past where we're at right now when it comes to VR because this is what we're used to. It just reminds me what you're saying is like to really understand this level of consciousness or whatever, what would they call, what would your guides call this part of the universe?
Well, they talk about collective agreement. So, I mean, this level of this level of vibratory accord, which is sort of the agreed upon reality that we're all operating in. So we all know what a sky is and what an ocean is, you know, and we've been taught the names for everything that exists. So what we do when we walk down the street is we're actually sort of, you know, interpreting the data of history. That's a chair, that's a post office box, that's the sky. So it's not to say that those things don't exist. They all do exist, but actually they can all be sort of re-comprehended, re-understood in what they call a higher octave. They use musical terms. So they say this is one octave and you get to lift to the next one. They say any song can be played in multiple octaves and to infinity. So you can lift to the next level and then you sort of begin to have that experience of the ocean and the sky, which doesn't necessarily conform to what they would say is the data of history, what things, what we've been taught that things should mean because that's what they've always meant.
Is if it sounds like they look at this level of reality, this agreement, this level of consensus reality as like a blindfold almost, that it's like we've been, it's obscuring.
It is.
I
mean, I don't know if they'd call it a blindfold, but it's what we've been taught to expect. And we're all been, I mean, I know what it means to be a man because I grew up in a male body and in a culture that says this is what a man is, you know? And we go into sort of a conferring of that, I think, in every area of our life.
Is in this energetic work, it's because I remember when we did the live show. And just not being prepared for the energy that was blasting out of you when you were doing it. And people in the audience were crying. Because no one, I don't think anyone was ready. Well, there, I don't know. It was pretty shocking. So the work you're doing, it's not just data. That you're, it's a healing work where you're blasting people. I'm sorry to use that term. Invigorating people with this energy that's pushing them up an octave.
I mean, I don't know that I'm doing it. I think it's what happens. The guides that I work with, well, they call them claims of truth or attunements that are spoken that actually they say encodes the energetic field to sort of have this lifting. And it's experiential. I mean, I'm not a spiritual teacher. I'm not a guru. I have no interest in that stuff at all. But I'm a channel, you know, and I sit down in the chair and I hear, and there's this energy that's very, very palpable that comes through when I work. But the point is not to feel the energy that's broadcasting through Paul. It's attuning to that in yourself so that you can do the lifting. And when you do the lifting, you get to lift everything that you encounter. It's all about co-resonance. So what happened when we worked, you know, before an audience is the energy showed up, people did the attunements, everybody sort of got their lifting, and then they're going, what the hell just happened?
Yeah.
And the nice thing is that they were feeling it, you were feeling it, and I think what that supports is the individual's ability to claim their own knowing.
Okay.
And the moment you claim your own knowing, you're not deferring to other people, which right. is super important.
Super important, isn't yeah. it? Oh, you can get in so much trouble. Well, this is the, you know, this is what people are saying. I'd love to hear your thoughts on this. People are saying that one of the great problems with social media right now is that it's attuning people to, you know, a variety of flavors of this particular reality that we're in, from mm-hmm. the most paranoid to insanely naive to some tricky thing put out by a corporation to mm-hmm. look like a thing yeah. that it isn't. But it's all these tuning forks.
Yes.
And so people are going on Twitter and they're getting psychic infections from concepts, ideas that mm-hmm. point to a reality that isn't even here. It's just something that someone made up. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it sounds like if we can figure out who we are truly... Mm-hmm. then we might not be so prone to being lost or dragged about by ideas that we're seeing in the mainstream media.
I don't know that we can figure it out. I think that we can realize it. And I think figuring out is still sort of a process of the personality itself. Like I want to get all the pieces and I want to make sense of them. And then I'm going to know who I am and then how to operate. And I'll know what's true and what's not true
yeah.
because I figured it out. And what the guides say is, you know, what's true is always true and has always been true and will always be true. And so to align to a level of truth,
okay, yeah.
then you get to move into realization, because to know something, to truly know it, is to realize it. And that's then to be in your own knowing. And once you're in your own knowing, you're not in energetic accord with the bullshit.
Right.
You see what I mean?
Yes.
So it sort of just doesn't resonate at that level. It's challenging for me because I still have an investment in what I think should be there and how people should see me and, you know, how I should be understood. And that's, again, all just the small self. The true self that I am couldn't care less
right.
what anybody thinks. Do you understand?
Yeah.
So I'm probably not answering your question. It was actually a good one because I'm even forgetting how you said it. If you want to say it again, I can go back
well,
in.
Well, it's just the question is, it's more of an observation that the importance of understanding attunement.
Attunement. Well, it's everything, you see,
yeah.
because attunement is your energetic alignment. So, yeah. you know, in the new age, you hear people say, you know, I create my own reality, you know, and I think that that's a little narcissistic sometimes, you know, like, and the guides would say, you know, you didn't create the war in the Middle East, but you're in energetic accord with it, which means you're attuned to it, because everything that you see and I see and anybody sees, we're in energetic accord with.
Right.
Because it couldn't exist without us. And this is this whole idea of, you know, whatever we're witnessing, we're in vibrational accord to and actually sort of supporting the manifestation of.
Right.
You know, which goes to this idea of, well, here was the example, because they dictated, this was in one of their books, you know, in the guide's books. And I said, well, does that mean if there's a book on a table in Paris, I'm in accord with the book on the table in Paris? And they said, yes, the moment you know that there's a book on the table in Paris, yes, because your consciousness is informing the book.
Wow.
And how you hold anything in consciousness supports your relationship to it.
Right.
And the collective is doing this. So the guides say, you know, as long as you are in agreement to war, because you expect it, because you've always have it, you're
right.
going to keep claiming it.
Right.
And you've got to lift to a level of consciousness where that is not present in order to be able
got
to
it.
Claim another reality.
Got it. Beautiful. It's beautiful, man. And God, you know, this is not to go back to it. It's just, okay. An Uber driver told me something that I think about to this day. He was talking about weapons manufacturers. And he said, if you're making umbrellas, you need it to rain.
You got it.
And so... Right. Now, this is where it gets really creepy to me, which is that there are a group of people attempting to attune all of us to a paradigm where yeah. war is acceptable.
Yes. Yeah. And that's fear. You know, the guides say again and again and again, the action of fear is to claim more fear. And if you look at like the last choice you made in your life because you were afraid, see what it got you. And more than likely, you'll see you got more fear.
Yep.
So every choice made in fear perpetuates that vibratory accord.
Yeah.
And every choice you're making in love, I would suggest, or without fear, is actually supporting a whole other trajectory.
Right.
So, you know, the idea that we're claiming these things, it's, you see, I mean, I was in New York during 9/11, you know, I lived downtown, you know, and then in the months and months that followed, there were, you know, red alerts and yellow alerts and orange alerts. And for the first 5 months, everybody was so frightened.
Sure.
And then we got sick of these damn alerts and people just started getting on the subway again, you know, and lived their lives. And the alerts went away. We stopped going into agreement that we should be scared all the time.
Right.
And if we're going to be scared all the time, we're very easy to control. And I do believe that.
Yeah.
So the idea is to sort of realize the aspect of ourself, or the true self, what the guides would say, that is operating beyond fear, and move into that level of vibrational accord.
Right. Wow. God, it's so cool. It's just such a great paradigm. I want to get back into something I was asking about earlier.
Uh-huh.
This, okay, so this is your, the way you're talking about this sort of, this universe is that we live in a place that we've sort of agreed to be at with a group of beings or people or things that vibrate at that level. But simultaneously to that, there is another version of this, another lens, another, I don't know. God, it makes me think like this is all computer code and there's another operating system we can reprocess the code through that could make this look completely different.
Mm-hmm.
So how different does this other place get? How different does it get from this place? Are there palatial heavenly mansions? Are there, you know, forests?
Yeah.
I
don't
ecosystem?
Get that. I actually don't get that. I mean, I get that what we're doing is we're experiencing what exists, but we're experiencing it in a very different way. And how we experience it actually transforms the reality of what we're experiencing. So everything gets lifted. So the idea, I think, that we're excluding things, you see, from the divine, from the sort of the tapestry that's life, that we're saying, well, this should be here and it should all look like a celestial heavenly palace because that's what heaven should look like, is actually deciding what gets excluded, which we're doing again by relying on all that old data of what's good, what's bad, what's beautiful, what's not. So, you know, in the most recent book, the one they just finished dictating another one, you know, because the books are all just sort of the recordings, the transcriptions of the dictations. They're unedited transcripts of these sessions. This, you know, I interrupt a lot to say, what does it look like? What does it look like? What are you really talking about? What's our experience of this? And I suspect, I mean, if I were to try to remember what they said, and I may have to bring them through and let them do this at some point because it's just, I tend to not to interpret it terribly, terribly well. They're saying what you see is what's always been there. They're saying, but operating at a higher level. And your congruence with that is what transforms you, is what transforms you and the landscape and the landscape. The landscape is lifted. They're saying the landscape is lifted. They're saying is lifted by your presence, by your presence and, and by the octave that you express in the high note. The high note calls all things to it, calls all things to it in lifting, in a lifting.
The high note.
The high note.
What are some other names for the high note? Is this the Godhead?
Yes, if you wish to call it. They're saying yes, if you wish to call it that. Call it the vibration of truth. You may call it love. They're saying you may call it love if you want to. If you want to. They're saying, but these are other ways of knowing God. To know God. To know God is to know truth, is to know truth, and to know love, and to know love. Not with religion. It really has nothing to do with, they're saying, with religion. It's a state of consciousness. It's a state of consciousness and an awareness of unity with all sorts of things. They're saying with all that's always been expressed, but not experienced by the personality structure, who is in alignment by its nature, to limitation.
Okay. So this makes beautiful sense to me.
Okay.
But I have a sense, and many people have a sense, that there is an active shift happening, that there's some kind of intentionality behind perhaps the other beings like your guides mm-hmm. to try to up-level this place. Is that truly happening?
Yes, I get that, you know. But I also get this. They're saying for me, I'm going to say, because now that I've got them plugged in, they're like saying, say this, but I know if they want to say it or they're pointing to me. So they, what they've said in their books, and they said this in the very first book, which they brought through in, I think 2009 was the very first one. It was like seven of them now. But they said that humanity is at a state of reckoning, and a reckoning is a facing of oneself and all of one's creations. Mm. And everything that's been created in fear, and that includes institutions and religions and everything else, has got to be reclaimed or renown or realized anew in a higher way, because everything is going to start falling. Basically, everything is falling apart, and that's actually part of this process, I believe, of sort of acclimating to our higher potential.
There's no way to get to this higher potential without some kind of collapse.
That I don't know. I hear that that's choice. You're choosing it right now. I hear you're choosing it right now. Your investment in what has been, how you've known yourself, how you have known yourself is in fact the issue. When you claim something new and try to hold the old, you move into a juncture of frustration, mm-hmm. To release the old is not destroyed. It is to claim what can come in its place. It is to claim what can come in its place. Many of you decide to ruin things before you can rebuild. But they're saying it's not a prerequisite.
Mm. Okay. How many beings are there like your guides out there?
I have no clue. And I've never asked. I mean, I work with this little posse, you know, and I just know of them as a posse because they use we. It's not like I'm, you know, looking around the room at them all the time. Many. What they're saying is many, more than you can even imagine. That's pretty true. But there are aspects of each of you, know it or not, that are enlisted, in this operation. So the true self is it, you. So the true self of each of you who comes forth to be realized in this engagement, is contributing to the shift. It's not all external. It's quite internal. The realization of the divine that must be inherent. All manifestation is what is being claimed. God in the tree. God in your foot, God in the one you can't stand, God in the one you can't stand. In that situation that you find abhorrent, to lift all things to a higher agreement is to know and to realize the divine exists, wherever you are, period.
Thank you. That's beautiful. That's amazing. And it brings me to a question I did have for you and the guys, which is, right now, we are seeing a true reckoning happen in a lot of different levels. The Supreme Court justice, you know, experiencing the results of his karma at this, like, crucial moment in his life. Mm-hmm. People are so angry with each other. And the guides have mentioned this. See God in the abhorrent.
Yeah.
This, I think, for me, I get to this part, and I can intellectually understand it. Mm-hmm. But in practice, mm-hmm. when we run into beings who have legitimately hurt us, when we were kids, you know, when we were helpless, how to do this, how to forgive, how to connect at that level when someone's really, really vile.
Well, they're saying they'd like to take this on, which is just as well. I mean, because I struggle with it too, and I get it. And I also get that I'm not doing this for the other person. I'm doing this for myself, because basically by tethering myself or aligning myself to that other person at that level of judgment or fear or anger, I'm lowering my own vibration. Right. That doesn't mean that I don't get to feel my feelings and move beyond them. But it goes to this simple idea, again, of what you damn damns you back. Mm. You know, in one of their books, they do this meditation where they say, you know, imagine you're walking into a cave, and in that cave is the one person you never want to see again as long as you live. And your job now is to lead that person out of the cave. And, you know, you're doing that because basically you've put them there.
Wow.
And they've called you to the darkness that you put them in.
Right.
Do you understand that?
Yeah.
So it's not about going out to dinner with them and saying, hey, wasn't that great? I mean, maybe after this lifetime, we get to have a big yuck about all the crazy crap we went through. But that's not where I'm at now at all. So let me go to the guides with this. The idea is simple. They're saying the idea is simple. Yes, I've got to, nothing can be outside of God except that which you place there. If you want to do it, you may. If you want to do it, you may. But then you call that to you. But then you call that to you. If that's how you want to operate, if that's how you want to operate, you may choose it. You may choose to learn those lessons and learn those lessons. You will learn regardless of what you choose. You will learn regardless of what you choose. But you want to learn through fear. But if you want to learn through fear, it'll be a hard teacher. It will be a hard teacher. Period. Mm-hmm. They're saying period.
Wow.
Now there's something that they wrote. It was in I think it's in the book that's just coming out, and they said, you know. Or right after, they did this odd lecture and they said, so what's happening now? And this is before a lot of the stuff that we're seeing in the media really hit. And they said, what's happening now is an excavation. And they said, imagine that everything that was buried in your backyard is in your backyard. You know, what you buried 5 months ago and 5,000 years ago, individually and collectively.
Yeah.
It's all coming up to the surface, and it's coming up to the surface to be re-seen or realized or re-known because it can't be healed when we're sitting on it and hiding it. Do you understand that?
Yes.
So then this becomes then a part of the process. Not a comfortable one, I don't think. But they say, imagine looking at that backyard with all the potholes and piles of dirt. I mean, it's an excavation site, and that seems to be a little bit of where we may be in this process now.
My father just passed away, and I don't know what it has to do with that or that I have a child on the way or what it is, but suddenly I've been having just photographic memories from my childhood.
Yeah.
Huge blind spots in my childhood, like just missing years.
Mm-hmm.
Now suddenly, holy shit, man, all coming back.
Yeah.
And a lot of it is really difficult to look at.
Mm-hmm.
And man, I don't know that we're ready. If people are ready to deal with this kind of excavation, it is pretty intense to see these things and then have to, you know, find forgiveness, you know, and you have to, you know, figure out a way.
I think it's happening anyway. Do you know? I think it's happening anyway. I mean, I think letting go of the need to blame is an important part of it because I think that that ties us to the problem, you know, and not to move beyond. And that's not to deny that things don't happen and people do awful things. I don't think that that's ever been the teaching. But, I mean, they say that the guides have said, you know, the one that's doing these things that you would call terrible is operating in a complete unawareness of who he or she truly is.
Right.
You know, they're operating in fear and at the cost of their true nature, which the guides would say is the divine self. They say that the divine is present in everybody, regardless of what they've done, how they think of themselves, and whether or not they know it or even agree to it. And when they work with these attunements, which they call claims of truth, and, you know, one of them is, I know who I am in truth, I know what I am in truth, I know how I serve in truth, I am free, I am free, I am free. Now, the personality self can't really claim that. You know, my personal self is like, well, I'm this old and I look like this and I wish I looked like that and I should have done this. And that's at the level of the true self or the eternal self, whatever you want to call it. That is the aspect of self that does know who he or she or it is. So the claim is always true. I know who I am. I know what I am. What means in manifestation, the divine that has come in form as who and what you are.
Wow.
And I know how I serve simply means how I express, how you express as that aspect of the divine.
Wow.
That's your expression. And in truth means in the field of truth, where the lie, when they say in truth a lie can't be held. So you move to that level of agreement.
Yeah.
And the claim I am free is basically I am free of the lies of what I've been taught to believe that allows me to express this. So this is the challenge. That's always true. I can say to you now, I know who you are in truth. I know what you are in truth. I know how you serve in truth. You are free. You are free. You are free. And at the causal level, that's always true. Even when you say, that can't be true. My life's a mess and I don't understand. I don't know who I am or what I, well, you know, but you're claiming the true self. Now, when you do that, you're actually aligning the person you're claiming it to be able to shift to that level of frequency. It's kind of like plugging in numbers on a jukebox and the song will play.
How
you're
cool.
not changing people, you're claiming what's always true. The challenge is to do that to the one you can't stand.
Right.
And then the one you think is a villain or
yeah.
abhorrent.
Sure.
Because it's got to be true for that person as well.
Right.
Or it's not true for anybody.
Right.
And this idea that some people are special and nice and good and they get to go to some idea of heaven at the end of a life if they behaved well, you know, at the exclusion of all those people that don't agree with us.
Yes.
I mean, that's the hypocrisy of religion.
Right.
I mean, if God is everything, you know, it's got to include everything and even fear. And the
yeah.
guides say, you know, fear is of God. It just refuses to believe that it is, you know.
And once, that's awesome.
And once that wakes up, you know, we're not going to have that issue. And we can go to that
right.
place by lifting above it to the higher octave. See, when you're operating at what they call the higher octave, by nature of your being, which is the claim I know how I serve, you're lifting into expression what you see.
Right.
Because how could you not?
Right.
You know, it's this old idea that God, or whatever you want to call God, sees God in everything.
Yeah.
Can't exclude.
Right.
You know, then you've got a punishing God who says this one goes to heaven, this one goes to hell.
Right.
And I think, you know, we have karma and we have our choices and the ramifications of our choices that play out. And that's a way to learn. You know, we can learn through fear if we want to. We've been doing it. But what the guides say is, you know, you've created the means for your mass destruction, you know, in the pretense that it's going to make you safe.
Right.
Which is crazy.
Wow.
If you think about
yeah.
it, to build a bigger bomb so you can be more safe is insane.
Insane.
You understand? But that's where we've come to. And so we're really at this place now of the need for great change.
Yeah.
A quick word from our sponsors.
Much thanks to the good people of RX Bar for supporting this episode of the DTFH. If you've ever found yourself looking at the ingredients in a protein bar and wondering if the recipe came from a page in the Necronomicon, then RX Bar is for you. Do you really want to pour bizarre chemical amalgamations into your sweet body temple? Do you really want to masticate unknown chemicals in the same mouth that you lick and kiss your lover's trembling body with? If your answer to that question is a deafening no, then RX Bar has got what you need. RX Bar, you've seen these bars before. They list their core ingredients, which are as simple as it can get. Egg whites for protein, dates to bind, nuts for texture, and other delicious ingredients like unsweetened chocolate, real fruit, and spices like sea salt or cinnamon. Turns out real ingredients actually taste really good. They're gluten-free, soy-free, dairy-free, and they're great if you need a breakfast on the go, snack at the office, toss into your backpack for a bike ride or a hike, or if you're creating a underground shelter and you want to have healthy snacks after the Depletians attack, which is going to happen in 2 weeks. RX bars come in 14 delicious flavors, including mango pineapple, chocolate hazelnut, peanut butter and berries, chocolate sea salt, coconut chocolate, mixed berry, blueberry, apple cinnamon, and they have seasonal flavors too in case you want to eat a healthy bar to celebrate Gorlog's birth in the Pyramid of Dreams. And now RX Bar has debuted RX Nut Butter, which contains a few simple and similar ingredients like egg whites, fruits, and nuts. I like RX Bars. Friends, I eat RX Bars. Well, because I'm 44, now I've actually got to be careful about what I put in my body. You should be careful, too, no matter how old you are. Even if you're three, you should be careful about what you're dropping in there. The illusion that some of these people actually give a shit about what they're spraying into their food is a byproduct of the hardcore hypnotic conditioning that we experienced in the America of the 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, and maybe even the last few years. Some people just don't really care, and they're filling up their oil canisters with just anything that they can swipe off the top of the exhaust pipes of top secret government jets, and then they just turned that into something that looks like a bar and put on the front some clever packaging and name. And the next thing you know, you're chomping down on what is essentially a piece of Chernobyl. But you don't have to do that anymore. You can actually eat a healthy, delicious bar. That's rxbar.com. And right now, if you want 25% off your first order, 25%, visit rxbar.com/Duncan and enter promo code Duncan at checkout. That's 25% off your first order. Visit rxbar.com/Duncan and enter promo code Duncan at checkout. Scoop them up. Take advantage of this deal. You can support this podcast by showing your support for RX Bar. And also, you never know, man. At any second, the sun can go into a complete dead solar minimum. The satellites could fall from the sky. And the next thing you know, all you've got to eat is unhealthy protein bars. And you don't want that when you're trying to survive and fight the skeletons and massive metallic spiders that are going to wage war on humanity in just a few weeks. Again, that's for 25% off your first order, visit rxbar.com/Duncan and enter promo code Duncan at checkout. Thanks, RX Bar. Now back to Paul Selig. This is, to me, all of this is just, you're so good at describing this. And always my mind gets blown hanging out with you. But to me, what's really interesting about what you're doing and the structure of it is that when you consider the combination of what you're talking about with technology, you know, because what we're seeing is like, oh, I get it. Like on social media, we're just seeing people who, using your guide's teachings, have aligned themselves with fear. Mm-hmm. And so these are the fear tweets on either side, right or left, you know, whatever it may be. The leftists are, you know, going to lead a communist uprising. You know, the conservatives have no, it's a fucking oligarchy, clearly. Yeah. And all the stuff in between, man, the economy is really going to collapse. I mean, national debt is insane. Then, like, my God, the Chinese have made like a crazy UFO level things. And it looks like the Russians, they have shit in the floating in orbit right now that, like, I don't know if you saw the Russian nesting doll satellite spits out these three little satellites and they don't know what the other ones are doing up there. So what I'm saying is, and I'm sorry to be part of it, but I don't feel afraid. I'm just giving examples. Uh-huh. So we have this constant sort of low-level fear drone bubbling up out of social media. So what you're saying to me is a little revolutionary, which is the idea that should we attune ourselves to this other level, this seeing God in all things, or this like shift to the new octave that you're describing, and then pair that with social media.
Yeah.
Now we've got something crazy, because when, you know, the Buddha achieves enlightenment under the Bodhi tree, and look how long it takes for the Dharma to spread around the planet, a long time. But what you're talking about, we just need a few people to get to the place that you're at right now to achieve this attunement, right? And then when that hits technology, it's revolutionary.
I think it can be if somebody wants to take that one on. You know, it's not, I'm not the teacher, you know, I'm a channeler. I explain what comes through me, but the guides that come through are the teachers. I'm just this guy that's trying to work through it.
I want to talk to you about this real quick.
Sure.
And maybe it's a little mundane compared to the very beautiful ideas your guides are putting forth. But one thing I've noticed is this separation between you and the writing, you and what the guides write. You don't remember some of it. Mm-hmm. You have a kind of humility when it comes to it. And then also you do say quite often, I'm not really a teacher. I'm a channeler. So I'm really interested in this. Do you feel like this is a necessary separation to continue your work? Like if one could tangle up the other?
It's not intentional. I mean, I'll say that it's not premeditated. You know, I was a college teacher for years, and I was a good teacher, and I loved doing it, you know, and that was a great part. It was the healthiest part of my life.
Yeah.
I was doing the channeling stuff and the energy work in a whole very quiet way for many years. I had a group that met in my apartment for 18 years. I had a website finally without my name on it or my photograph because I didn't want people to know who I was, that I was doing this stuff, because I was trying to maintain this other life.
Yeah.
So some of that, and then I realized that was fear. And then once I started getting attention for the books, I had to accept the fact that, you know, I was party to this experience. And I don't claim the separation. I mean, it's not, I think there's a merging that happens when I'm working and that I'm accessing a higher part of myself, but I don't think that the guides are my higher self that I'm bringing through. I think that they're working in a somewhat different way. I can't explain it all, you know. I just know that, you know, I'm accessing stuff that I don't think I could know, and I don't think, however articulate I may be as a man, I'm capable of closing my eyes and dictating, you know, 6 or 7 books that don't require any editing, which is how these things have happened, you know. I mean, I don't go back and fix anything. So the separation piece is for me, I do think this is important, I do think that what's happening as I do this work is I begin to be more as my true self, and that they operate through me in a more of a place of union.
Right.
So it's not this crazy up and down that it used to be as I get more comfortable here.
Do you have a physical side that you feel them on? Do you feel them in your body? Or
No. I mean, there's phenomena for me. I mean, when I first started doing this years ago, I literally used to feel that somebody had their lips pressed against my forehead, and I was feeling the vibration of the words.
Yeah.
And then I would form them with my lips, which is sort of how I got into this whispering and repeating habit, because there was this slight delay as it went from the buzzing here to the mouth. And now, very often, before I start to channel, before I'm doing a group or a dictation for the book, and the books are now done in front of groups, so, you know, there's no separation there, I'll feel a lot of pressure at my head, at the crown, or at the third eye, or sometimes I'll just feel myself enveloped in the energy. I mean, I can be sick. I channeled the end of the last book, I think it was 102 fever. You know, and the guides were fine, you know.
When I saw you, you were sick. Is there some correlation between this? If you're running this circuitry through you, do you feel like it could like make you?
No, fatigue? I don't think. Yeah, I think it can. And I think some of that's my self-care, you know, which I have to learn. And I'm much better with than I used to be, truthfully. But I think my nervous system is what's used. So when I'm channeling a lot, I'm highly raw. You know, I mean, you could drop a fork in the next room and I jump out of my skin.
Wow.
I mean, it's just like my nerve ending. It's like having a sunburn. I have friends that call it psychic burn. So I don't think this is I think this is not uncommon. So that's some sensitivity. But I think I get a lot of calls because I'm riding on airplanes all the time. And, you know, and I'm schlepping through different time zones. So, no, I don't think that there's that. But the physical stuff is interesting. I've been told, I haven't seen it, that when I'm really channeling sometimes and I'm working directly with individuals, my eyes turn bright blue. I mean, I have hazel eyes, you know. And
wow. And
I think that that's interesting. And it's funny because I'll do a group and I'll say, and, you know, and there's a thing where the guides will just go around them and look at everybody and attune them, you know, individually. And people raise their hands and say, you have the most beautiful blue eyes. I said, well, I don't have blue eyes. And the whole room goes, what? You know, and that's what they've seen.
Wow.
So, I mean, I understand. I don't know what it is, you know. So there's a physical component to this, but, and this is true for all of us, what they've said is we've been raised to believe that the divine is sort of up there somewhere in a cloud, maybe, and we're stuck here in the mud.
Yes.
And the teaching is that God is the mud, and God is also the body. And the exclusion of the body from this equation of the divine is what is precluding us from realizing the divine in the physical reality that we're living in.
Yeah,
so sure. That's the claim, I know what I am, which is in form, which allows me then to know what you are,
gotcha.
Which is the realization of the divine expressing as you in the matter itself in vibration.
Wow.
Yeah.
Why? It's so weird. Why can't we acknowledge it? It's insane. It really is. Like when you look around, everything's perfect. Yeah, I can see that most of the time. My God, just form itself. My God, look how incredible it is that we have physics, gravity. It's all very beautiful to me. But then in darker times, as soon as the focus goes from there to me, mm-hmm. that's where you're like, no.
Yeah.
What a nightmare creature yeah. this is. Completely yeah. a mess. Why? Why do we do that?
I hear training, agreement, vibratory accord, what you choose to reinforce what you've been taught. It's what we've been taught. Yeah. It's what we've been confirming. I mean, I don't think that what the guides are bringing through is necessarily a new teaching. I mean, they say it comes. They've been teaching this stuff for thousands of years, and that this is the next opportunity for realization for us. You know, it's not new stuff. So, you know, I can accept that. But I think that the indoctrination that I had into fear was pretty extraordinary,
yeah.
which is and still present. You should be afraid, you know.
Is this from your parents? Is this from...
Yeah, it was. I mean, in this lifetime, yeah, you know. I mean, I believe that I've had prior lives where I've had some tough lessons in fear, too. But yeah, I mean, I was the chubby kid that got bullied, you know.
Right.
So that carries some weight. And, you know, as I move beyond that, my experience of myself is very different in the world. But those buttons were put there, yeah.
That's it. Oh, my God. It's just, it's a brutal, back there is so rough on kids. I think it's because I have a son coming, and I'm just thinking, yeah. like, man, I want him to be, like, loved here. And it's so brutal. Like we, and then when I contemplate my own teachings and the teachings I got and the teachings many of us got when we're born, that we were taught that this is not a safe place.
Yeah,
and that there's no real security here, and that you're always on the it, depending not everyone,
yeah.
but if you were born into like a poor family, or you were born into alcoholism or
yep.
trauma, man, it's a pretty rocky universe. Sometimes it feels like there's no way to truly get that, for lack of a better word, thorn out of our sides. We can expand well, beyond it, but the guides, or do you have anything to say about the idea that there's a potential to shift all of that suffering into something?
I'm going to ask, because I can, yes, you're saying yes, I'm going to. Yeah, I'm saying yes, if you want to, but do you really want to? It means forgetting who you think you are, and who you think you are, and who you think you are is wounded and hurt, and suffering, and to look for agreement to that, and you look for agreement to that. Tell me in my life, how I can be these things, how I will continue to be these things, and you perpetuate them unconsciously, the true self as you, who knows who he is, has never been harmed, knows himself in wholeness, and seeks to confirm that. We're not speaking what you feel. We are not dismissing what you feel, but we're saying something you are. But what we are saying is, it is not who you are. It's how you know yourself. It's how you have known yourself and have chosen to do, and how you have chosen to agree to your life, Agreement means accord. Agreement means accord, not conscious choice. You're confirming your reality. You are confirming your reality through the identity you claim. I am a wounded man. Supports that reality. It's hard to get better. It is hard to get better, to transform creates a long path. You may awaken in a moment, your true nature, but at the cost of what you have known, And that's the great challenge here. You really release the idea. Are you willing to release the idea of who you are, It's just an idea. Nothing more and nothing more.
Wow. Yeah. It's like addiction or something, it feels like they're talking about. Like there's a sense that we're hooked on fear. It's because your guides keep saying, you can do this, but there's other ways. And that this feeling of like, it's just, you've got to give it all up. You've got to let it all go. It seems like a, you know, I'll tell, this is a thing that happens to me invariably when I take a psychedelic. Depending on how strong the psychedelic is, if it completely just blasts my ego and there is no way to hold on, it's beautiful. Transcendent unification, complete this, I don't know, there's a million different ways to describe this state. But if ever I find myself at the place where there is a chance to die, to let go, to just say goodbye to the tiny little corner of the infinite universe I've claimed as myself, I just can't do it. It seems like a like, I don't know. Once you get to that point that your guides describe, it's just a self. It feels like, well, for guides, perhaps for you, a world-renowned channeler. But for many of us, this concept of laying down our identity, letting go of the past, truly, it's terrifying because it feels like a kind of extinction.
Well, yeah, but it can't be done at the level of personality. And that's the whole challenge here. And we're still thinking we can do this through the personality. And it's never going to happen there.
Okay. Right.
And that's why I think they say it takes a moment. Because it's really only in a moment that realization occurs, you know? It's not necessarily, and that's not like it's a quick fix. You know, it's not a fix at all. It's another way of knowing the self.
Right.
Now, when I'm channeling, you know, I am operating, I'm actually putting you can call the personality self in the backseat of the car. You know, I'm like giving it a magazine to read, you know, and this other thing is happening. And as I maintain that, I begin to have this other experience of knowing in my life. You know, when I work psychically, which is, you know, one of the things I do, they call me a medium for the living. So I can tune into somebody and, you know, that's I've never met, that's not in the room, that's still got a body. And I can often hear them and feel what it's like to be in their skin and sometimes take on their mannerisms or facial expressions when I do it. Well, it's an interesting thing. I don't know how I do it. I just call it stepping in. But when I'm working at that level, I'm operating in my knowing. Do you understand this? Because it makes no logical sense.
Right.
You can't try to figure out how that's done. You know it by doing it. Like the guides say, you know, when you're standing under the showerhead, you're not trying to feel the water. The water's there. When you're standing in the wind, you're experiencing the wind.
Wow.
And this whole idea of this seems to happen like that, you know. And again, It's vibrational accord.
Yeah.
So I don't think, I mean, do I walk around with my complaining personality self? Ask my friends. You know, I had a friend this morning that says, let's just have a good day. Don't complain. I said, you mean don't complain? The answer was yes, don't complain. I said, okay. But I like complaining. You know, it's again, my way of sort of being a curmudgeon in the world. But it gets me what it gets me, which isn't necessarily any good.
Wow.
Do you understand that?
Yeah.
So I still have those choices. I don't think that the personality is extinguished. So they're telling me to say this. I mean, when I was maybe 32, 33, I was in a really rough time. And I was opening up as a channel in those days, you know, significantly. And I'm 99.9% sure I heard this in channel because I wrote it down. I don't think I read it someplace. But what I heard was, freedom will come when the throne relinquishes its king. Mm. And I was like, what the f- does that mean? You know, it was like some enigmatic statement.
Yeah.
And now I completely get it. Which is, freedom comes when the one who's sitting in the throne, which in my case is, you know, the personality self who wants everything his way and the world should treat me as I say I should be treated and this is what should be in my world, you know, that's the small self, and the small self dictates a small kingdom.
Right.
So when the small self steps out of the throne and the true self, which is the divine self, the guides have called it at times the Christ itself, and their definition of Christ is a simple one. They'd say it's the aspect of the divine that can be realized in material form as who and what you are, who anybody is. It exists, they say, in all of humanity. It's the seed of the divine that seeks expression.
Right.
So when the true self takes the throne, then you have the kingdom. The kingdom, they say, is the awareness of the divine in all things. It's already there, but it needs to be seen by the one who operates in vibrational accord to it. So I don't get that it's at the exclusion of the small self. They say the small self is actually assumed by the true self.
Wow.
You know, it's like the loving energy, the loving energy of the, but you can call it parent, except that's a rotten model because most of us had tough times with our parents.
Yeah.
So who wants to use that one?
Right.
But this idea of being, having that level of alignment, they even talk about the braiding of the will, that the small self's will and the divine will can actually be sort of braided, and then the small self's will is sort of assumed in the higher, so that it becomes your expression. So we're not always going, well, who am I and what level am I operating at? I don't know if this is making sense, but
100%.
It's what they...
Yeah. It's beautiful, because I love it, because, man, everyone does kick the shit out of their small self, you know? And I especially love what you said. I love complaining.
Yeah.
And I have friends who are like that, and they love that aspect of themselves. they're like, I love being a curmudgeon. It's the best.
Yeah.
To me, that is so perfect. And this self-flagellation we do is, what you're telling me is something I definitely forget all the time. It's like, no, it's not as though we have to throw ourselves into some cosmic ashtray and become some other thing. It's that the self, I love that, the self that we are gets to experience this embrace, gets filled up, so it doesn't have to be so deflated, I guess. Yeah. Are people a little deflated, cut off from the spirit? Or is that what's happening? People have a tourniquet wrapped around them?
Well, I think so, because I think everything, you know, people come to the workshop sometimes and say, so I have a great spiritual life, but how do I bring this into my business life? And the question makes no sense, because it's your life. Your spiritual life is your life.
Right.
It's your sex life. It's your financial life. You don't segment these parts by having a practice and wearing, you know, a bunch of white and meditating every day. I mean, those are things you can do. But if then you're acting like an asshole in business, you're still responsible for that.
Right.
Do you understand that? And you're operating at a level of vibration that's going to call to you the ramifications of those choices.
Right.
So the tourniquet, I think, the idea of becoming spiritual as if it's something one becomes. I don't think one becomes spiritual. I think it's your innate being that's seeking expression. But this idea that this has to happen at the cost of other things, it does, I think, happen at the cost of who you think you are. Mm. But that's an idea. Nothing more than that, you know. I mean, I don't know if I'm answering this well, but the idea of the tourniquet, because when I first got into this stuff, I didn't know what to do with anything, you know. I didn't know if I was allowed to have a good time. I didn't know what it meant, you know. And yes, you know, that's choice too. You know, we get choice. We have choice. How do you want to express yourself? What's your greatest joy? Whatever your expression of your greatest joy is going to bring joy to others. There's no question about that.
Wow. This is so great, man. I the only thing I take issue with any of the things that you say is that you say you're not a teacher. To me, it really makes me scratch my head because I think, well, you are teaching. You have guides. They're teachers. But how are you not a teacher?
I'm better. I'm more engaged than I used to be. But I call myself, you know, the guy that sits in the chair. And when people come to hear me speak, I'll introduce myself and tell my story enough so that people have a context for who I am. And then I close my eyes and I'll hear one phrase repeated again and again until I speak it. And the moment I speak it, I'm operating as a radio, you know, and the radio itself isn't necessarily the one to judge the broadcast or to decide about it. So the teachings that come through me, I can then go back and discuss, but I'm not necessarily, and I say this quite honestly, I'm not there yet. So I can tell you what I understand they mean, but am I operating without fear? No. You know, the difference is I know when I'm operating in fear and I'm not looking to excuse it. Mm-hmm. And I'm not looking for other people to buy into that and support me in my fear. I might be looking for a pat on the back or a hug, you know, but I'm not looking for you to agree with me that the world is a terrible place and we should all be afraid and stockpiling guns in our basement and, you know, or there's some terrible thing.
How close are you to that?
To that?
In your personality?
I grew up in a home like that. I grew up in a home, you know, and, you know.
Preppers?
What?
You mean preppers? Like preppers, like people who thought the apocalypse?
No.
Just a scared.
Just that the world was, you know, the idea that the next thing that would happen would be terrible, no matter what.
Okay,
so you're living in a world where you're expecting the other shoe to drop all the time. And that's lasted. I carry that, you know. Still, if I look at an email, I say, oh my God, what's the bad news?
My expectation
isn't necessarily that it's going to be loving. And I have to say, and I was thinking about this morning, if I could move to a place, truly move to a place, which I hope, and I'm sort of putting this out there as a request to my peeps, the idea that if I could move to a place where I could really get the universe as loving as a loving place. That would totally remake my whole consciousness.
Wow.
And the thing is, I believe that's true intellectually, but I'm so busy looking at the evidence to the contrary and affirming that I keep getting it. And when I say loving, I don't think that means that people don't die and people don't get hurt and people don't make terrible, you know, errors of judgment, because I think we do.
Right.
And I also think these become our opportunities to learn and to grow.
Yeah.
You don't learn and grow by getting it right the first time. You know, none of us do.
Right.
And so if I could get to this place, though, where I felt that the world was more welcoming, you know, at that simple, simple level, because some people I know live there and they grew up that way. And I'm like, wow, that's so interesting to me. I don't come from that.
I know.
But I believe that it's so. So the teacher in me, and is a good teacher, can show up. And I'm a student of the work still. And maybe when I teach this stuff, I'm also teaching myself.
Okay.
Do you understand? And that's how
yes.
I learn it. But the day has yet to come, and I don't know if it will for some time, where it's a weekend workshop with Paul Selig, and Paul Selig's not channeling. Because when the guides come through, I mean, I can carry the energy. You know, I operate sort of as a conduit for this stuff, and the energy is quite palpable for most people, which is nice. But I don't confuse the energy with me. And if I start doing that, I move into ego, and then I move into, look at how great I am. Another psychic once said to me, you know, Paul, there's a reason you don't fully own this, because you'd be impossible if you did. And I think that can be true too.
Oh, it's this is the universal problem. It's like, but so this, or not universal, but many of us run into this predicament. And
yeah.
By us, I just mean people who are trying to like make the world better. You know, you just a sense like, fuck, I think there is a way to really help this place get a little prettier than it is right now, or a little more connected, or mm-hmm. prettier is a lame way to describe it. But it's so funny, as I'm talking to you, I think the guides are awesome. They're amazing. I mean, watching you do it inevitably is just one of the craziest things I've ever seen. But you're awesome, man.
Uh-huh.
You know, and I think that like finding that place of realizing like, well, the guides are cool. Well, they're cool. But man, you've got a greater, you got an awesome personality, man. And that way that you're breaking down what they're saying to me is like a real teaching. You know, it's interesting. I love that you're honest about it. We're so imprinted, you know, like all you need to do is be the rotund child and experience the many deep, hardcore humiliations happening each day, and then throw on top of that any kind of turbulent family, and you've got more neurons in your brain than at any other time in your life. You're like you're wax, and this wax is being imprinted, and it's a deep imprint, man. You know, it's a deep imprint.
I don't know, though, when I look back on this, you know, I didn't get into this stuff because my life was going so great. I really didn't, you know. I had a list of things that I thought I had to do in the world to be okay, you know, by the time I was 25. And I got the whole list, you know. I had just gotten out of Yale. I was, you know, a playwright. I was being produced. I wanted to be an interview magazine so I could get a hot date, you know.
Wow.
I got the whole thing. And then I was sort of bottoming out in the Gopher Campus Motor Lodge in St. Paul, Minnesota, where I couldn't find drugs, you know. I mean, this was my party days were about to come to an abrupt end. And I started praying for the first time in my life, you know, because I was raised an atheist. And, then something sort of happened. And a few days later, I heard a voice telling me to get my act together. And that was the first voice, you know. So the idea that I got to go through what I went through to come to be who I am, that doesn't mean that I think I'm noble, because I had a lot of people have crappy childhoods,
yes.
You know? I mean, this doesn't make you special.
No.
But I do think that everything is an opportunity to learn. And if I can begin to frame experience that way, then I don't experience myself as being a victim.
Right.
And that allows me then to go on this journey. But if I'm so busy blaming, you know, which was an easy place for me to get stuck in, I'm not going to, I'll get more of the same of that. You know?
Oh my God. It's so easy to do. But yeah. This is a question, if you don't mind, may I ask one more question of you and yeah. maybe of the guys?
Sure.
And can we do an attunement again through the podcast?
Yeah, of course.
For the listeners, people uh-huh. listening. So my question is, based on this idea that you mentioned, which uh-huh. is like, okay, if I see my past as a lesson,
yeah,
then I can work with it. Whereas if I see it as some like chaotic thing and now I'm a victim, then it's just, what are you going to do? You're just going to propagate the misery. I have been taught by people I respect that we choose these incarnations and that all of that stuff has been given to us as a gift to evolve our consciousness. Mm-hmm. I believe it in my mind, mm-hmm. but in my heart, I think, come on. We see so much suffering in the world. I see children, you know, dying in Syria.
Yep.
And it feels to me like this idea that, oh, no, we choose this is a way to try to fix a concept that there's just evil in the universe and mm-hmm. rotten things happen. Mm-hmm.
I think rotten things happen. I think evil's a tricky word. I think the guides talk about it in one of the recent books, and I don't remember what they said and you know about it, but they do talk about a spectrum of high and low. And they say when they talk about an octave, they talk about the low notes and the high notes. Do you understand that?
Yeah.
But it's all still existing as of God, whatever you want to say. So in a lot of this stuff that we call suffering or is created by us. We're the ones doing it, and we perpetuate it, and we're responsible to that. So I'm going to go and see if the guy would love to. They're saying we would love to. So I'm going to see if I can do this when we have a few things to say. Saying we have a few things to say about the question of why you're all choosing. You are all choosing individually and collectively when you incarnate, there are opportunities. Many of you get your lessons. Many of you get your lessons through challenges. That's only one way to learn. That's only one way to learn. If you should perpetuate challenges you've had. If you wish to perpetuate the challenges you've had, you will learn through them. You will learn through them until you can learn no more. Until you can learn no more. When humanity decides he has had enough, he has had enough, she has enough, she has had enough of perpetuating shame and greed and separation. You will learn differently. You will learn your lessons differently. War is an act of greed. Mm-hmm. Greed is an act of fear. Greed is an act of fear. The choice of fear is to claim more fear Much of what you describe is born in fear. That does not absolve it of its responsibility. You make choices in fear. You are claiming accountable choice and are accountable to your choice. The collective is as well. Now if you are here to learn, that you are participatory in the collective. Stop thinking so small. Your alignment, the divine as you, who has come to be realized, claims the divine and everyone else, in everyone else, by nature of your being. When the collective lifts in a new agreement to what humanity is and how it can be known, these things you describe will cease to exist in the ways that they have because they are creations of fear, and they're reminding you that there can be no God, when in fact what they are emblemizations, outpicturings of fear-based choice and agreement by and through the collective, by and through the collective, period.
Wow. That is crazy to be around. Man, I don't know if you feel it like people around you do, but that is the strangest. It's a strange feeling. You create a warp. My friend talks about this, how some people can warp the room. Mm. I've seen really great comics do it, where the energy field in the room bends or something. Yeah. It's the craziest feeling. Wow, man, that is so odd. I want to do an attunement, and if you don't mind, and then also before I want people are going to want to find you.
Sure.
But I want to point one little thing out, and it's mundane again. Mm-hmm. But when you mention this sense, this feeling when you do your work and resonate with people somewhere else and do essentially like become them.
Yeah.
And I've heard this described. I haven't seen it. And I don't think I'm ready for it yet. But you know, the other place that I've heard that sense of like, oh, it's a feeling. It's like it's not from imitation. It's from feeling. Is comedians who are really, really good at doing impersonations. And they will describe it as a feeling. Like there's a sense that they get and then they do it. You know, they do the impression.
Yeah.
And so it's fascinating to me to hear you describe the same thing, except you don't even know who it is you're doing the impression
of. No, but I see, the thing is, I would put money on the fact that if those same comics were given the name of somebody and they did the same thing with the name of somebody, they didn't know the level of accuracy that you might find in their depiction. See, I was a playwright when I was younger, so that was becoming character was something that I could do. And when I started doing readings, and somebody, I didn't know that I could do this until I did it, and there was some woman who mentioned her father's name, and my eyes were closed, and she gasped. I opened my eyes, said, "What's wrong?" She said, "Oh my God, you started to look just like him." And then I found out that I could do it all the time. What I didn't know was I was always tuning in. Do you understand? I just didn't know that I was doing it because nobody had ever told me that it was possible. So, you know, in some ways I was trained for what I do because I used to induce, before I wrote creatively, I was inducing trance. I put on one piece of music for hours until I just would hear character. Do you understand?
Yeah.
And, you know, I had the worst writer's block of anybody I've ever known in my life, you know, and now the books that are dictated through me take days. 30 days is on average of 30 days of sessions. It can be spread out over a month or two now. But the first book was 2.5 weeks every day sitting in a chair. The second one was a month. And it was like a 500-page book, you know, no editing. Yeah, it's funny. But we're not as separate as we think. Do you understand this?
Yeah.
And once you understand that, your experience becomes more fluid in your ability to feel what other people feel and know what they think. I mean, they filmed me once for a TV thing with, I had this mother in the room and she gave me the name of her kid and I tuned into the kid and I didn't know anything about the mother or the kid. And they intercut me with the film of the footage of the kid, and the kid, it turned out, had cerebral palsy. Mm. And you saw me sort of claw up and rock in the chair and hit myself in the head, and I went deaf on that thing. I kept saying, "I can't hear," and I didn't know what the hell was going on. But I watched that about 20 times because I couldn't really believe it. Because normally when you say, "Oh my God, you look just like my girlfriend," I'm going, "Good, I'm glad." You know, or, "Oh my God, she said that to me yesterday. Good, I'm glad." But the evidence, I think, is available to everybody. So your comic friends are probably doing it more than they know.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Cool.
Okay.
This was beautiful. Thank you so much. Uh-huh. I have so much to integrate and think about now. Thank you very much.
My pleasure.
Can you give people, how can you tell people how to find you?
Sure. It's, my website is paul@paulselig.com. It's PaulSelig.
Got it.
One question. Did you want to do the attunement? Did I use up time?
No. If you have the time, I would love to do
it. I'm happy to do it.
People listening, for me, for the
house, do it. Yes, please. I'm going to let the guides do it. I'm not going to do it. Sit back. Where they're saying sit back if you would and imagine this. And imagine this, that there is an aspect of you, that there is an aspect of you who knows who he is, who knows who he is, who is unafraid, knows who she is, That is not confused, that is not confused. There is an aspect of you. There is an aspect of you seeking to announce herself, seeking to announce herself in realization, as who and what she is, an experiential way, in an experiential way. Would you say these words after us, please? I know I am in truth. I know who I am in truth.
I know who I am in truth.
I know what I am in truth.
I know what I am in truth.
I know how I serve in truth.
I know how I serve in truth.
I am free, I am free, I am free.
I am free, I am free, I am free.
Now ask yourself these questions. Are you willing to live to a place of being, to a place of being where you may be fully expressed and know the self anew? And know the self anew, if in fact you're willing. If in fact you are willing, see a staircase before you. See a staircase before you. Only three steps are needed. Only three steps are needed. Take the first step, please. Take the first step, and if you are willing, and if you are willing to release any ideas you may be holding, to release any ideas you may be holding of who and what you are, of who and what you are, that are operating and limitations. Simply say yes. Simply say yes.
Yes.
Then go to the next step and acknowledge this. And acknowledge this. The life that you have lived thus far has been an opportunity to learn, and it will change. And it will change by your new agreement. By your new agreement to be who and what you truly are. To be who and what you truly are. If you are willing to release the idea that you are your past, that you are your past, and what happened to you, and what happened to you, simply say yes. Simply say yes.
Yes.
Then go to the next step. Here lies a threshold. Here lies a threshold. And on the count of three, we're going to invite you to step over the threshold. We are going to invite you to step over the threshold into what we call the upper room, which is a higher level of vibration, and agreement. By doing this, you are giving permission to be realized in a way, to be known as who you truly are, beyond the small self structure, codification of history. On the count of three, if you would, step over the threshold. Step over the threshold. One, two, three. Step over and be received. Welcome to the upper room. Be known by us as you wish. And give permission to be reclaimed, rearticulated as who and what you have always been, in the higher octave, or the upper room. Thank you each for your presence. Good night. They're saying and good night.
Wow.
Here you go.
Thank you so much. What a joy. Thank you. I'm really grateful. It's always a blast to hang out with you.
That's an honor. Thank you.
That was the amazing Paul Selig, everybody. All the links you need to find Paul will be at duncantrussell.com, along with the offer codes for our wonderful sponsors, RxBar and Charlotte's Web. If you enjoy this podcast, do me a favor and subscribe. Also, give us a nice rating on iTunes. Check out the Patreon over at patreon.com/DTFH. Now, here's a little treat for you, my sweet, darling dandelions of the Northern Lions of Light. I was going through an old box of beetles that I had embalmed, and I found at the bottom of the box a very rare Fergus Blanders tape, which I bought at a flea market in North Carolina in the 80s. And I just wanted to play one of the tracks from that tape. You won't find this on the internet. You won't find this anywhere. Much of Fergus Blanders' stuff has been either intentionally censored from the internet or just hasn't made it up there due to that huge licensing problem that he continues to have with Darius Trammell. But here it is, a track from Fergus Blanders live at the... I don't know where, because I can't really make it out because the tape itself is covered with smashed beetle bits.
Not an easy time when you see your mind slide into the past on a water slide, and you take a dip in the waters. What you was dreaming. The raccoon that you raised, the boy with the beret, marching in Sweden when you thought you was gay, and the finch on the bench that was judging you. your brothers for dreaming. Snorting cocaine on the whiskey train when Satan's the brakeman. Makes no sense to complain when you find out the track is made of promises broken. So hold hands if you can and be friends with all men, even though we're all parakeets sucked into God's fan with nothing to stop our ascent except clinging to what we've been dreaming. I was taught that some circus clown who hung himself in the French Quarter. It never makes much sense to not use a IP blocker when you're sending a email.